is John Finnemore's souvenir programme.
So, to sum up, it all comes down to the density of the timber. If we can keep it to, say, 500 kilograms a metre square, then the project's feasible. Otherwise, well, I wouldn't like to say.
I see. Thank you, Jim.
But obviously, denser timber is going to have a knock-on to the subsidence profile.
Yes, of course. Does anyone have details of that?
No. I do, yeah.
Oh, Alice, great. Fill us in.
Right, well, the site is located in a large alluvial plain.
I see, yep, so it's impossible.
Ah, well, not necessarily, because actually, groundwater extraction's been decreasing steadily over
right,
the
so
last
we're in with
10...
a chance. For instance, if we can
well, we might be, but the thing is, I've actually managed to see a copy of the county surveyor's report.
Oh, right. And I bet I can guess what that said.
Yeah. Well, you don't need to, because I can carry on telling you.
The usual doom and gloom and arse covering, probably, what, 26, 28%?
Interestingly, there are a lot more optimistic.
Oh, at least, I bet more like
35.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can just tell you.
But even so,
like,
taking that as a working hypothesis, somewhere in the 25 to 35 region...
I can literally tell you what the number is.
Is there any way of telling whether that's likely to rise or fall?
Yes, there is a way.
Sorry, Alice, were you...
Yes, I was, yeah.
Sorry, you have the floor.
Okay, so the number they're actually giving is only 18.
Well, that does surprise me, because they're...
And I did, in fact, ask about their future projection, and the response was surprisingly...
And the rest is history.
Well, no, the rest is news, which I have, and I'm in the process of giving to
so
you.
So I think what Alice is saying here is that we...
No, guys, I'm actually here. You
confident.
Don't have to guess. It's not like a séance.
Yeah.
I'm saying. Guys, hello!
Yes, she's certainly saying something, isn't she?
I mean, can anyone hear
Sounds
me?
Sounds like she's got some pretty important information.
I haven't.
Only there was some way of finding out what she knows.
I mean, you could just shut up and
some
let me tell
sensible,
you.
Some sensible, realistic way that still involves me talking.
Men! Just let us finish. You're doing really, really well these days about letting us start talking sometimes. We're very proud of you. Now, just go that extra mile and let us finish talking. It's not...
That's right. Don't just cut in because you think you know where she's going with... Done, my boys. The Sheriff of Nottingham is once again confounded.
Huzzah! Well done, good Sir Robin.
Thank you, Maid Marian.
Aye, the Sheriff was well foxed.
Thank you, Little John.
Truly our merriest exploit.
Thank you, Will Scarlet.
Hey, I'm Will Scarlet.
Unbelievable.
Ha-ha! I know, I was making a merry jest.
Don't try and ha-ha your way out of this, Robin. You're always doing this. It's incredibly rude.
Well, look, I'm sorry, OK? I just always get you two mixed up. Because, you know, you're the only two who don't have a thing.
A thing?
Yeah, the rest of us all have a thing about us. Like, there's me, Robin Hood, the leader, Robin of Locksley, Robs from the Rich...
Yes, okay, you've demonstrated you know who you are.
Right, and then there's Maid Marian, who's the girl one.
Oh, hey, I'm not defined.
No, I know you're not, darling. I'm just saying that's how I remember you. And then there's Little John, who's actually big, so that's funny. And Friar Tuck, who's the vicar I've got for some reason. And then there's you two. You know, you're just a bit samey, that's all.
Don't try and make this our fault. You've only got five merry men, one of whom's your girlfriend. You ought to be able to tell us apart.
I can. Mostly I can. It's just I can never remember which of you's Will and which of you isn't.
Oh, my God, you still don't know my name.
I do.
Say it, then.
It's just on the tip of my tongue.
Alan Adale.
Oh, right. No, I wasn't going to say that at all. Alan? Are you sure?
Of course I'm sure!
Alan Dale.
Alan A. Dale.
I don't think using your middle initial's going to take the curse off it. Alan the Outlaw? Might as well be Keith.
Oi! My name's Keith.
What? No, it's not.
Bloody is. Keith Tuck.
Seriously?
Yeah, what? Do you think my first name was Friar?
No, but I didn't think it was Keith. Well, thank God for Will Scarlet and Little John.
John Little.
What?
My name's John Little. I put my names in the wrong fields on the sign-up form. You seem to really like it, so I just went with it. I'm not even that big, or little.
Right, so my merry band of swashbuckling outlaws include Alan Dale, John Little, and the Reverend Keith Tuck. You sound like a crown bowling team.
I'm sorry you feel that way. Robin.
Hey, yeah, Robin and Marion.
Oh. Don't drag me into this.
Hello, yes, we're Robin and Marion Hood from Nottingham. We booked through booking.com.
Yes, we did actually book a super deluxe room, and this appears to be just deluxe. That's right, Robin and Marion Hood from Nottingham.
Yeah, all right. Major point. No one is to make any more jokes about anyone's names. They're all a bit rubbish.
Will Scarlett's actually quite cool.
Well, we'll find you be leader then.
Thank you. I'm absolutely delighted to welcome you all here today to celebrate the marriage of my beautiful, talented, one-in-a-million daughter, Joanne, to Tess. Now, originally, I was going to say here this was the proudest day of my life, because that's what it said in the template. But then I looked at it and I said to myself, you know what, Yvonne, you can't say that. And I'll tell you why not, because Jo's going to be speaking later and I know she'd call me out on it. No, you would. You know you would, darling. That's just the kind of relationship we have, where she feels completely able to hold my feet to the fire when I'm doing my usual thing of being ridiculously self-effacing. Mum, she'd say, I know most mums say their daughters' weddings are the proudest days of their lives, but come on, Mum, get real. Most mums have never walked the entire length of Hadrian's Wall. Or raised in excess of £130 for Help for Heroes. Or been to Bali. Anyway, today certainly is among the many, many, many proud days of my life. From an organisational standpoint, if nothing else. I'm sorry about the celebrant. We had absolutely no say there. I did protest, but apparently there's a rota system. So we ended up with Mrs. Sniffles there. And I did what I could. I gave her some warm-ups to do from my days in improv and a strepsil I found in my coat. But it was a lost cause, really. Anyway, that aside, I thought it went pretty well. The Stilt Walkers are engaged till 5, by the way, so if you've not had a look at them, pop out and have a look at them. What else? Well, Jo, of course, darling Joanne, little Jo Berg. Doesn't she look stunning in that dress? Would you believe it? She wanted to wear a suit. I said, darling, you know by now I am your staunchest supporter vis-a-vis the whole sapphic thing. But we have to draw the line somewhere. I mean, if anyone's wearing a suit, let Tess do it. She's got the shoulders to carry it up. Oh, speaking of, I should say a word about Tess as well. I like her. She's always very polite. I don't think that's more or less everything. Jo's going to do all the thanks, so I don't need to bother with that. And besides, it was basically all down to... Well, Jo's going to tell you. So I suppose all that remains is for me to invite you to raise your glasses and toast the happy couple. So, ladies and gentlemen, the bride and her wife.
Hello, little strawberry.
Cactus?
Yes, strawberry.
Why are you so spiky?
Oh, that's easy, strawberry. If I wasn't covered in spikes, animals would try to eat me.
Oh, I see.
Strawberry?
Yes, cactus.
Why are you so soft and bright red?
Well, cactus, if I wasn't, animals wouldn't try to eat me.
Right.
That's also why I'm delicious.
Are you?
Oh, yes. Really yummy.
OK, so one of us has really messed up then.
Yeah. It looks like it.
God, I bet it's me.
Hooray! The rapture! Hooray, pickles! Bye-bye, Mr. Cactus!
No, it was her.
thank you for coming all this way, Mr. Cook. Your book proposal is most interesting, but my board would like to know a little more about you. You are an historian, yes?
No. Don't know much about history.
Oh. I see, then. Your background is in biology?
Don't know much biology.
Ah. And yet, your proposed book is entitled An History of Biology.
That's right.
Ah, so I see. You intend it as a layperson's science book.
Don't know much about a science book.
Okay, so here we are in Paris. And of course, we tend to publish our
books.
Don't
know much about the French I took.
I wondered whether you would. Well, Mr. Cook, forgive me, but what do you know?
I do know that I love you.
Yes, and I love you too, but you have to give me something to persuade the rest of the board.
I know that one and one make two.
Okay, that'll do. We'll retitle it a very, very simple history of mathematics.
Une histoire de mathématiques très, très simple.
There you are. You see, I told you, you're always doing yourself down.
Thank you. And now just pull into the side of the road and park. Remembering the handbrake.
Oh, yep.
Thank you. Well, I'm sorry to tell you, on this occasion, you have failed to pass your driving test.
Failed?
I'm afraid so. You had two major faults and six...
No.
No?
No. I'm sorry, I don't accept that.
I don't...
You see, in my life, I never let anyone tell me I'm not good enough.
Well, that's very commendable. So I would suggest you book another test.
No, you know you're not hearing me. I do not let people tell me I'm not good enough.
I understand.
Okay, so am I good enough?
At driving?
Yes.
No.
But I don't let people tell me that.
Right, but still, you're not.
In your opinion?
Yes.
Right, but my opinion is that I am good enough. Yeah? I believe in myself.
Okay, but I'm a driving examiner.
Oh, my God, are you literally telling me that my opinion is less valid than yours?
In this one specific area, yes.
No. Let me tell you something. Eleanor Roosevelt, okay, the first female prime minister of this country... she said, no one can make you feel inferior without your consent, and I don't consent.
I'm not trying to make you feel inferior.
Oh, really? Can you drive?
Yes.
Can I drive?
No.
Okay, I feel inferior.
Oh.
And I didn't consent.
Look, sometimes it's appropriate to feel inferior because, John.
Margaret, yes.
Just say, I'm getting increasingly uncomfortable about the target of this sketch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it started off being about one particular annoying phrase, yeah. But somewhere it seems to have turned into a kind of generic... hacky piece about millennial snowflakes.
Ah, yeah, no, fair enough. I'll tell you what's happened. I was thinking I'd like to be one of those comedians who offends everyone equally, you know? Where no one is safe.
Yeah, OK, you're really not, though.
No, I know. Loads of people are safe.
I think you actually... make people feel more safe.
Yeah, I know. So I thought I'd try and put that right. And, you know, I've done loads of sketches about uptight, conceited old people, so I thought it might be good to find a different target.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's one explanation, sure. Of course, another explanation is that when you started doing this show, you were 33, which is the old end of young.
Okay.
Yeah, whereas now you're 41, which is...
You don't need to finish that sentence.
The young end of old.
Oh, but you have done.
Yeah, so maybe all that's happened is that over the course of this show, you've gone from being a young person who finds old people irritating to an old person who finds young people irritating in real time.
Fine. Here's a sketch about irritating old people.
Yeah, it won't make you 33 again.
Shut up! Excuse me, please. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, yes, hello. We're Robin and Marion Hood.
Yes.
Yes, from Nottingham.
Yes.
Yes, we booked through tripadvisor.com.
Ah, you are welcome to our temple.
Yes, and it's very nice, don't get me wrong.
Don't get him wrong.
Don't get me wrong. But it does have to be said.
He does have to say
it. I do.
It.
The fact remains that my wife and I have been waiting for nearly half an hour now, and we just feel, you know, like more or less the same.
The same.
Yes.
Ah, and how do you want to feel?
Well, what we want is what we were promised in your literature, which was an epiphany.
Yes.
Yes. The temple was advertised as a place of tranquility and epiphany, but we've now been here for 27 minutes and not a thing.
Nothing. It's just mainly boring. Mm.
It is not given to everyone to experience an epiphany.
Given? Sorry, I to be clear, not actually asking to be given anything. We have actually paid to visit this temple, so...
So...
Yeah.
Perhaps you are not ready for enlightenment.
Yeah, I actually doubt very much the problems with me. I happen to be an exceptionally spiritually receptive person, and so, to a lesser degree, is my wife.
To a lesser degree.
Yes, I said. Yes, when we went round Chartres Cathedral, the Holy Spirit descended on me in 3 minutes flat.
The priest said it was the quickest he'd ever seen it descend on anyone.
Yes. And it was the same at Machu Picchu. I was barely out of the coach and I had a full-blown epiphany.
And I had a little one.
Did you? I don't remember that.
Oh, well, you were busy having yours, but yes, a little one. It was about moving the whiteboard to the back of the utility room door.
Not sure that counts as an epiphany, dear. I think that's just having an idea.
It struck me with the force of an epiphany, and I was looking right at Machu Picchu at the time.
Oh, well, maybe it was one then. You see, within 5 minutes at Machu Picchu, we had had, as a couple, between 1 and 1.5 epiphanies. But after the best part of 30 minutes staring at your little Buddha, not a sausage.
I am sorry for you.
Well, that's all very well, but what are you going to do about it?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing?
Yes?
Nothing. Even as a solid rock is unshaken by the wind, so are the wise unshaken by praise or blame.
Well, that's very convenient, I must say. Well, come on, Marion, we're clearly wasting our time.
Farewell.
It's only fair to warn you, this exchange will be fully documented on TripAdvisor.com.
Yes, and Robin is a level 6 reviewer.
Yes, level 6.
6?
Yes. Well, since you ask me for a tale of the biter bit, the petard owner self-hoist, and medicine tasted by its own diabolical pharmacist, I believe I can furnish you with such a one. I was at home one cold, bright day in January when the doorbell rang and my valet came into my study. I sighed and explained to the man for the umpteenth time that when the doorbell rang, that meant that he should go and answer the door. Not come to wherever I was.
Oh, yes, sir, I was forgetting. Right you are.
He left and shortly returned.
A young gentleman to see you, sir. I have shown him into the drawing room.
Have you?
Yes, sir.
Even though I am in here.
Oh.
I joined my guest in the drawing room. He was a young fellow of unusually short stature and evidently in some distress, for he was rocking to and fro pensively. Can I help you, young man?
I hope so, Finnemore. I have brought you what I believe will surely be the most challenging puzzle of your whole career.
Oh, have you? I mean, I like the easy ones too. Still, fine. But first, would you care for a drink? Whiskey, absinthe, or something stronger?
Something stronger? Like what?
I don't know. A bear? Would you care for a bear?
No, I think not. I'm a person of mild habits. If you have one, I will nibble pensively upon a rusk.
So, providing a rusk, I poured myself a whiskey and absinthe and composed myself to hear my visitor's tale.
Well, you should know that I reside with my parents in a small Sussex village. My father used to be a big noise in the city, but has retired and is now a vague smell in the countryside. And my mother runs an agency helping cats find people who dislike cats so they can sit on their laps.
And you yourself, I asked, what line of work are you in?
I am at present a trainee human being, or to use the common vernacular, a child.
I see. Well, that explains much that has been puzzling me. Your diminutive stature, the rusk, the rocking to and fro. Tell me, did you bring that rocking horse with you?
I did, yes.
I thought it wasn't one of mine.
To continue, my parents and I are often visited by my aunt, a dull but pleasant enough woman, or so I thought. But 2 nights ago, Finnemore, my aunt, utterly unprovoked, committed the most extraordinary crime in full view of us all.
What did she do?
You will scarcely believe me when I tell you, Finnemore, but I assure you it is no more than the literal truth. She got my nose.
She got your nose?
She got my nose.
She got it.
She did, sir. She got it.
Your nose.
My nose. She, in short, got, to put it plainly, my, the next word I say will be the object of the sentence and it will be nose, nose.
You are certain?
Wretched woman left no room for doubt. She positively crowed about her achievement. Got your nose, she cried, in the broken cackle of a mad woman. Got your nose!
What a chilling tale. Were you in great pain?
Oddly enough, I was not. Slight tweaking sensation, but nothing more.
I do find that remarkable. You see, sir, I myself have had my nose pulled off my face on three separate occasions. Once by a malevolent sister, once by a playful monkey, and once during an admittedly incautious investigation into the case of the malfunctioning threshing machine. But on each occasion, I can assure you, the pain far exceeded what even the most stoical child would describe as slight tweaking.
Sir, if you are insinuating I was mistaken, let me tell you I positively saw my severed nose gripped tightly in her hand. There is no possibility of error.
I see. Do you remember, by any chance, in what manner she held it?
Sir, every detail of that scene is forever imprinted upon my mind. She held it between her index and middle finger.
Aha. I rather wondered if she did. Most instructive.
But what possible bearing can that have upon the case?
Perhaps none, sir, perhaps none. Merely a little idea of my own.
Well, as you can imagine, I was much distraught by the loss. It was a particularly fine nose, sir. I have, in fact, twice won the cutest little button nose in all the whole wide world competition, as judged by my grandmother. Accordingly, I demanded my aunt return it to me. And now, Fenimore, comes the most extraordinary circumstance of the whole affair.
She did.
She gave it back.
More than that, sir. She restored it to my face.
That seems medically implausible.
Nonetheless, such was the case. And that is the baffling case I wish to engage you to investigate.
The case is solved.
Surely not.
Surely so. What were the curious points of the narrative? First, that your aunt, previously a woman of blameless character, should suddenly assault a beloved nephew for no personal gain. Second, that the pain was so slight and the repair so effective. And finally, sir, the curious question of the aunt's nasal grip. Perhaps you will indulge me in an experiment. I have here a small bowl of noses. Select one and hold it up to me.
Very well. This one.
Ah, precisely. You will observe, sir, that you are holding it as 99 out of 100 people will, between your index finger and thumb. That is the natural way in which to hold a nose. And yet, your aunt chose to hold it between her index and middle fingers. Surely a most inconvenient arrangement. You see, it is my belief that your aunt is an accomplished conjurer. At the moment of tweaking your nose, she slipped her own thumb between the two fingers before mentioned. It was this thumb which she then displayed. Reverse the procedure and voila, the illusion was complete.
Bravo, Fenimore! Extraordinary!
A mere trifle, I assure you. But as I attempted to rise, a curious thing happened. My legs gave way beneath me and I collapsed back into my armchair like a walrus into an armchair. My guest regarded me with a sardonic eye.
Then it has begun to take effect.
Take effect? What?
You see, Fenimore, your theory is a pretty one, but there are some points it does not explain. The first is this.
With which he gravely pinched his nose, which went what I can only describe as squidge.
A copy, Mr. Fenimore. Plasticine. An extraordinarily fine copy that would deceive all but an expert. But a boy knows his own nose, Fenimore. And mine was not orange. Besides, do you seriously suggest that I cannot tell my own nose from an elderly woman's thumb? No. She got my nose. But who would want it? I dived into the criminal underworld and spoke to every schnozman, hootersmith and conkfence I could find. They all told me the same story. There is but one man in Britain with an apparently insatiable desire for noses. A man so arrogant that he showed me, of his own volition, a bowl full of noses in his own possession. Who has a bowl full of noses, Fenimore? It's not a normal thing to have.
I can explain.
I don't want your explanations. I simply want my nose back. Return it, sir.
I cannot.
You must.
It is impossible.
You see, in the short time since I received your nose, I have become very attached to it. You have made much in our interview about your supposed skill in recognizing your own nose, but I fear you have overlooked it today, although all the time it has been right under, right in your field of vision. Yes.
That is?
Yes, sir. It was in front of you all along. As plain as the nose on my face.
But why?
I told you already that I had had my own nose pulled off on three occasions. What I admitted to say was that it was only sewn back on again twice. From my sister and later from the monkey, I was able to retrieve it. But the threshing machine was a more implacable adversary. And since that day, I have hunted, bought, and yes, stolen noses to act as a replacement. But none would fit. The bowl I so incautiously showed you represents the failures. You see, my own original nose was noted for its extraordinarily delicate moulding. Indeed, I twice won the very same cutest little button nose in all the whole wide world contest you mentioned, but both times when I was in my 50s. It was clear no ordinary nose would do. So I contacted their head judge, and, in the guise of a former winner's natural curiosity, asked who the current top seeds in the CLBN in all the WWW were. Well, she spoke very highly of a postmistress in rural Ethiopia, and, of course, the current title holder, the finance minister of Japan. But then she revealed, with becoming modesty, that her own grandson was himself a past winner. Now, you may criticise me for choosing a mere child as my victim, but in my defence, Japan is a really, really long way away.
Fenimore, you have told me nothing I did not already know.
What?
Quite so. I knew very well that my nose was attached to your face. I have asked for the return of my stolen property, Fenimore, and I will not be denied. That is why I drugged your whiskey in absinthe, and it is also why I have smuggled into your rooms, inside this innocent-looking rocking horse... someone I believe you already know.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Oh, my God! My sister!
Got your nose!
Good night.
John Finnemore's Souvenir Programme was written and performed by John Finnemore, with Margaret Cabon-Smith, Simon Kane, Laurie Lewin and Carrie Quinlan. The producer was Ed Morrish, and it was a BBC Studios production. John Finnemore's Souvenir Programme is committed to sustainable comedy. For every punchline we harvest from John's frontal lobe, we plant two new premises in the back of his mind.